Okay, I think we'll get underway. So, Megan, our producer, if you could hit the start recording button for those who can't attend in person, that would be terrific. And I want to welcome everybody to today's webinar. This is Scott Weigert from Bates. And our topic today for our XPI Community of Practice webinar is Tough Nuts to Crack, Giving Leaders Actionable Feedback on Challenging Facets. And I'm joined today on the call by Michael Jackson, Michael Jackson. That's a pretty good one. I'm in London in a different time zone, folks, so I'm going to blame any verbal lapses on the fact that I'm still a little jet lagged, perhaps, but not much of an excuse. I've got Michael Sidecheck with me here as Walter Jackson as well. So Megan, let's advance to the next slide. And we'll show everybody our beautiful faces here. So there we go. So as I said, kind of a multi-site webinar here today. I think all four of us involved in creating this webinar are somewhere different. So like I said, I'm in London. I'm over here doing a program in London this week. I've got programs in Amsterdam and Oslo next week. And then I'm excited to say we have our first ever XPI certification program happening in Copenhagen, happening in late March. And so I'll be over here for a good while. Michael Sidecheck, our Director of Research and Assessment, is joining us from Philadelphia. And then manning the fort in our home office is Walter Jackson, who all of you know as our Director of Global Partnerships. So before we go forward, I wanted to mention we're really trying to change the tenor of these conversations a little bit. I think in the early days of these webinars, we were kind of hearing ourselves as the experts in the XPI, and hopefully we still have a bit of expertise to share with you. But we wanted to acknowledge that we have a growing number of folks among our certified partners who really have much to share on their own with their wisdom as they get more exposed with the model. So we're going to be trying to have these be more of a dialogue, and that spirit is going to come into our play today. But let's move forward to our next slide, Megan, and we'll talk about our goals for today's program. And what we're looking to do is we're going to decide which you all think are the toughest nuts to crack among the facets. And by that I mean, of the 15 facets, we've picked a handful of them, five or so, that we think are particularly challenging. And when we say tough nuts to crack, what we mean is they can feel tough for a leader if you get feedback. Some facets may feel like, well, that's a pretty easy fix. If you get feedback that, for example, appearance is hurting, you might feel like, well, I can do some shopping. I can maybe get an executive image consultant to fix that pretty quickly. But other facets turn up on a fairly regular basis as difficult for ones. They can be difficult for us as insights providers with the XPI, but they can also feel really difficult for leaders. They may challenge that leader's sense of self-efficacy. They may feel like, well, it's not within me to demonstrate this quality, and no wonder I'm getting rated lowest on it. So we'll take a vote on which ones you want to explore and talk about first today. And then after we do that poll, we're going to invite you all to weigh in on why that facet might feel like a daunting developmental challenge to leaders. What is it about that challenge? And we're going to unmute some folks if you're inclined, or you can share comments in chat too if you want to just type in things if that's more comfortable for you or just easier for you, or if you're not in a place that allows you to be unmuted conveniently, if you're in a coffee shop or something like that, you can weigh in through chatting. And then for each facet, we're going to then figure out whichever one we voted on first, second, and hopefully third. We'll go in that order, and we'll talk about what makes them challenging, and then most importantly, how can we provide actionable feedback to leaders on that, on each of those tough nuts. So let's take a look at the next slide, Megan, and we're going to give you a little bit of a poll here. Well, our toughest nuts, first of all. We've circled a few here, so I think we may need to keep advancing to show which ones we circled. So can you hit keep advancing, Megan, I think, to show which ones? Yeah, keep going. I think we should have five of them circled. So these were five in no particular order that come up as pretty difficult to work on and come up more frequently. That said, you know, any of the 15 will come up on an insights call. Any of the 15 can rank rather low. There's some other ones here that turn up pretty often, but I think in terms of the ones that feel particularly difficult for leaders and also turn up pretty frequently, these are the ones that come into play most often. So let's go forward now and let people vote on which of these five. If you can only vote on, I think we're going to let you vote on up to two. So which two of these would you most like to discuss today and work on today? So let's go to the next, go to the actual poll. And organizers, so my fellow folks, Michael and Walter, you're not allowed to vote here, no loading the deck. And but go ahead and pick of these five. You can pick maybe up to two, I think you're allowed to vote on. So pick a couple of these, and we'll give you a minute or so to do that. While we do that, Michael, why don't we unmute you for a second, or you can unmute yourself and just weigh in on general. Does this seem representative to you of five that come up pretty often for you? I'd be curious.
Absolutely. They're the trickiest for a number of reasons. We'll get into that later, but this seems right to me as the ones that often are the trickiest for people I'm working with to get a handle of. What do I do? It raises the most concerns.
Sure. Okay. So maybe we've given ample time to vote. So what do we have as an outcome there? Oh, interesting. So I have no idea what this would reveal. So I'm going to write down the order of the results here. So authenticity, 71%. Boy, I thought that would be significant, but I wouldn't have picked that for number one. And then our next most common one is resonance, 43%. And then we have a tie, it looks like, between practical wisdom and vision. So very, very interesting to see that, 29% for each of those. And then restraint, I thought might get a few more votes, but that's fine. So that comes up as a bit low. All right, so thanks so much for that. Oh, that was an interesting exercise even in of itself. Let's go on to the next slide now, Megan, and we'll go back from that. And now that we've weighed on that, so it looks like by popular demand, what we're going to talk about first is authenticity. So if we go to the next slide, what we'll see is some questions. We have that as a slide, and go on to the one after that. So the first question, we're going to focus on these really one at a time. So we're talking about authenticity right now. So what is it that makes authenticity feel like a daunting developmental challenge for many leaders? What gets in the way of leaders who maybe are getting a lower score of authenticity? And at this point, I'd like to invite you either to chat comments if you prefer, or you can click the raise your hand button and we'll unmute you and let you weigh in on that. But we're talking about authenticity. And before we try to solve for it, we're really going to just try to understand what makes this hard, what gets in the way. So anybody like to weigh in on this? I'm looking to see if we have a hand up here, and we will unmute you, or we can have you type in chat comments as well. Because we really want to invite some dialogue from the group in general. So anyone have any thoughts they'd like to share? Okay, looks like we have a hand up from somebody. Shirley, okay, so everybody, I'll introduce Shirley Haggerty. Shirley, as you'll hear from her accent, grew up in Scotland and came to our certification in December. So Shirley, just unmuted you, say hi to everybody.
Hi, good afternoon in the UK.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. I'm back in your old stopping grounds here, I guess. So. Yeah, great to have you on board. And tell us a little bit your thoughts, Shirley, about authenticity.
Hey, Scott, I was thinking as I'm looking at the descriptors, sometimes it can be hard to actually describe what being sincere, for example, is actually like to somebody who's got no concept of that. So I think mm-hmm. there's a bit of work there helping somebody to really understand what the disconnects are. And these are hard things to actually describe to someone who instinctively doesn't actually behave like that.
Interesting. Yeah, I think it's true that, and this can be true for any of the facets, I think, that sometimes people read into what the description means or they get a notion of what it might mean, which sometimes is on the money and sometimes we might need to reframe. Anything else with authenticity in particular that you think may make it feel more difficult to work on than, for example, intentionality or something like that? What makes authenticity tough, do you think, Shirley?
I've worked with people that are experienced perhaps as not being genuine or as a bit fake or phony. And it's quite hard to bring to life for them what other people are actually seeing, particularly when you've not got a lot of information when you're doing a feedback session. So I think really someone who might have a disconnect between what they intend and what how they're actually experienced might actually, you know, need to really do some work on self-awareness.
Yeah, so that's always a challenge. We're getting their own perceptions, we're getting a rating of them, but we're rarely getting a chance to see them in action at the time we've seen the report. So if they are rated as a bit insincere or phony or not phony or not or more phony and fake, we might struggle with insight as to why. Anything else you'd add, Shirley, on authenticity? And if not, we can always open it up to somebody else too.
I think that's good. Thanks, Scott.
All right, I'm sure we'll come back to you a little bit. Thank you. And anyone else, other comments that you have here on authenticity? Elizabeth? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's Michael. There's a number of things, but one of them is that I find that it's usually the transparency questions that are tricky. And often it's a surprise to people, so that it's gee, I never knew that before. In other words, it's I didn't know I was paying a price for not revealing what's going on in my head, what my thoughts are, you know, as you like to say, Scott, the why behind the what. So it's usually a revelation to people, because they. They don't know that other people actually want to hear more from them. And so that's a big surprise to people. And sometimes that's what gets in the way, is because they never assume that what they're thinking is important to share, but that as they get onto a bigger stage, it becomes more and more important for people to know what's going on in the leader's head.
So that's a good point, Michael. I think what may help everybody also here is, you know, so Shirley has talked about really items 1 and 6 under authenticity, which are how much you're seen as sincere and genuine. Michael's talking about a couple more of the items, which is another slice of it, that transparency piece. Along what Michael was saying, I had a leader recently who seemed very authentic to me on the phone, and I when we dug into it, though, and I mentioned, like, it's about sharing the intent behind the content. That was suddenly a light bulb for him, and he said, oh, you know, it's true. I talk a lot, but it's all about the content. It's never really about the intent. So that made people see him as much less transparent than he really felt that he was. But then a third element under authenticity is also probably the most frequently rated low of all six, is the two items. One is about sharing the life lessons that kind of inform your point of view, or sharing personal stories that help people get at behind your thinking. And a very common pattern I see on the XPI results is folks who get really quite high results on the sincerity ones, and then somewhat lower on the transparency one, and then a lot lower on the storytelling ones as well. So maybe I'd like to invite Elizabeth Gibson in. I'm going to see if it's okay to unmute you here, Elizabeth, because I'm sure you'll have some interesting things to say about authenticity in general. But can you talk a little bit, Elizabeth, maybe about, in your experience, what makes this feel difficult for people?
Well, I think it's Elizabeth Gibson here, coming to you from Austin, Texas. And a couple of things. First of all, earlier, before you mentioned those two items, I want to get back to those two items about sharing life lessons and history, is the notion of what it means to be professional in the workplace. And I think, I think the definition has changed and is changing, but back when I entered the workforce, basically to be considered a professional, you squelched all your emotions. And you didn't let them come out in a public setting. Now, I know that's pretty rigid, and it's kind of passé now. But I think people carry some vestiges of that around. I can't show how I really feel. And at times, they can't really show how they feel. So that's one thing that came up. In terms of sharing the life lessons, I've seen that pattern a lot. And that's when I usually bring in the Bates tool that you schooled me on, the storytelling for leaders, and I've especially seen it with people who are more introverted or more private. And I see if we can devise a couple of stories that you're comfortable telling that really shows some of who you are, you can bring those out when you choose to bring them out. You know, you get to set the boundaries there. And I think that's, I've seen that be very helpful to people. But again, in certain settings, working with different organizations, it hasn't been part of the corporate culture that it's okay to discuss things outside of work. I mean, that is so different in different settings. So some people adhere to that.
Yeah.
Those are two things that come up.
You're triggering in me, Elizabeth, is when you talk about the personal stories, a couple things that I've seen come up is, I call it the sort of people who have this separation of church and state mentality about sharing the personal in the workplace. And then for a while, and I promise folks, I'll try to maintain to my behavioral integrity and deliver on this promise. I'm going to give you an article at some point in the next couple of months on what I call all or nothing thinking or binary thinking, because I frequently hear what Elizabeth's talking about of leaders who say, it's really not me. I'm introverted. I don't like to talk about myself. I don't really see the point of it. And then there's this all or nothing thinking where leaders will sometimes say, so Scott, you're telling me I need to spill my guts at work and share the most painful moments of my life at work, the humiliating experience I had in kindergarten when I was the last for kickball or something like that. And to which I always say, no, I wasn't really talking about that. So I think in terms of focusing first on question one of what makes it difficult, there's this sort of double bind where people and fall into that all or nothing thinking they have to really disclose a ton. And then also there's the what I call the authenticity paradox, where somebody will say, well, gee, if I start really opening up and sharing a lot, that's not really me, so won't trying to be more authentic actually make me inauthentic? So any reactions to that last piece, Elizabeth?
Yes, actually. I was thinking about a corollary that early in our call, I was thinking specifically of a woman that I had given feedback to from a large financial firm, and she was, in a sense, very wedded to her authenticity, and she was looking at how do I work on things like composure and restraint. If I try to act that way, isn't that being honest and authentic, and people will know it's not me? But it's kind of in the same vein. It's like, how can I change? How can I grow? Because if I do that, it's not going to seem authentic. And what we talked about was, you do have the right to change and grow. You can let people know or not that I am trying to move into this area. So you're going to see me trying out some new behaviors and then give me feedback on them. And it depends on the rapport you have with the person. But for this woman, it was really a revelation that she said, oh, yeah, that's right. I can have aspirations who I'd like to grow into being. And so that seemed to give her the license to try out behaviors that might seem not completely natural to her, but ones that she would like to adopt.
Mm. Great. Well, thank you, Elizabeth. I'm going to switch you back to mute here for the moment. So I think that covers pretty well some of the reasons why authenticity might feel like a tough nut to crack. So what recommendations do you have in your coaching of people? If you have leaders now, or you're thinking you may have leaders soon who really want to work on authenticity and become that much more authentic, I'd love to have anybody share, whether it's by typing something in or raising your hand to share. And Megan, if we could just clear the sharing of the hands there for a moment, that would be great. Just talking to Megan, our producer, and clear the questions that we have already answered. I'd love to hear any ideas you have. Well, what would you suggest to make that feedback actionable, to make authenticity feel like not such a tough nut to crack as something I could do? Elizabeth has already alluded to some of our storytelling for leaders tool that we use at Bates, but I'm curious what other ideas you have. Looks like Karen has her hand up, so I'm going to unmute Karen Delk. So Karen, say hi to everybody. Tell us where you're from so we can span the globe here a little bit.
Okay, hi there. I'm Karen Delk, and I'm in Princeton, New Jersey. surviving not hurricane, but winter storm Stella. So the authenticity is personal, because when I took the EXPI, it was something that came up for me, not with a lot of people, but you know, you tend to focus on those few that give you the feedback. You're like, huh, why is that? And I think it is, I want to comment on this because I think we've touched on it. I think in different cultures, not only corporate cultures, but also cultures in general, you know, ethnic cultures, that kind of thing, how much information you share and how transparent you are has a lot to do with trust. And will that information come back to bite you? And so I think that as people work together over time, that trust builds and it's natural. They may invite each other to, you know, different events that are outside of work. But I think within Western culture, you're going to see differences, particularly as it crosses, I think, some gender lines and racial ethnic lines. It takes a really, really, and then there's an individual component. So how comfortable are you as an individual sharing information that makes you authentic? You know, those who are extrovert generally don't have that issue. But those that are introverted or reserved or trying to make an assessment about the organization, about the people, about their own comfort level, there is just so many layers to it that I just wanted to kind of add to that and then introduce this whole notion of trust. Because I think fundamentally, that is the reason that you don't have people sharing openly, because they're not sure how that's going to be used.
Yeah, great observation, Karen. And I feel like that's a terrific one to mention, because of course all the character facets have a strong trust element to them. If they're strong, they can build trust, and if they're lower, they can detract from trust as well. So I think it's really good for you to kind of bring us back to that concept of trust. So yeah, if Karen is my peer and I disclose that I'm unhappy with our mutual boss or something like that, maybe that feels uncomfortable for me to share with Karen, whereas sharing some personal story feels like it's okay for me to share, or vice versa. So it can be very selective, and all of us are probably differently authentic in different contexts, both at work and outside of work as well, in terms of our perception of the safety of the disclosure as a part of it. So I think that's an excellent point. Thanks for sharing that, Karen. Karen, while we still have you on here, anything you would add as to what would you recommend for folks who are looking to amplify their authenticity, have it come across more strongly while still being true to who they are? Because obviously, if I'm a bit more reserved and a bit more reticent, I've never really believed in fake it till you make it. Well, Scott, just go out there and pretend that you're really authentic and pretend you're really comfortable sharing stuff when you aren't. So what do you think is some advice you would pass along to a leader who has maybe been given some lower feedback? I don't know what's worked for you, as you mentioned your own feedback with us.
Well, I think that the first step is obviously tipping your toe in the water to feel a bit comfortable, and testing out, you know, small things that you think are certainly, you know, your opinion. So, you know, always I think you have to be authentic. It's not good to try to answer what Joe or Jane says, you know, because it worked for them. And I think many times people are trying to mimic someone else. They kind of look for who's the standard here where things are acceptable. And mm-hmm. sometimes you say, well, no, that crosses the line. I could never do that. And so you try to find out, well, what is it that I can say that I feel comfortable with? So I think it's, you know, speaking up. It could be in the form of a question. It could be the form of a comment. It could be a reinforcing statement. And I think those are ways that you can test and kind of get a sense from the audience, whoever they are, how that feels. But I'll also share that in one of my coaching clients, he had what you called, Scott, where he focused on the content versus the intent. And so he was viewed as someone who, as I described to him, I said, you know, what your feedback is telling you is that you can take the hill. Any obstacle, you will either, you'll definitely accomplish it. Everyone knows that. You're either going to, you know, scale the hill, dig through the mountain, or go around it. You're going to figure out something. But that, and that's a good trait, but that alone, without seeing if other people are with you, is not going to be as helpful. And so one of the situations was a colleague who he had some difficulty with. Her parent passed away, and he had not acknowledged that, and he felt initially uncomfortable. And I said, well, is there a reason you feel uncomfortable? He said, well, that feels personal. And I said, well, it is personal, but it's a colleague you've worked with for a number of years. She's probably in some pain. And one way to maybe bridge this gap that you have is to call her without any content. The sole purpose is to say that you've heard and just talk to her and engage her in that way. And that, it was a new behavior for him. He was reticent to do it because he was very content driven, but it made him human. Mm. It made him softer and not, yeah. you know, I meant, you know, it took the edge off. But it was definitely a new behavior for him. And then after, you know, when I followed up, he said it felt strange, but it also allowed me to see, you know, a different side to her. And we had a very, very good discussion, and he felt very, very good about it.
Mm. Well, thank you for sharing that, Karen. And just to build on what Karen was saying, you know, that last example I think is a great one. You know, sometimes in situations we're reluctant to speak up for various reasons. The recent bereavement is a very common one. And I often say in that situation, you know, whatever you say, say something at least. Because if people are low in authenticity, one thing I say to them sometimes is, I say, put a slogan up on your bulletin board, a three-word slogan, which is avoid the void. Meaning that if we aren't sharing, if we aren't disclosing or sharing the why behind the what, then there's a void out there. People don't know where we're coming from. It's kind of like our parents who say, well, why can't you stay up past 11 o'clock? Well, because I say so. You know, it's never going to be very satisfying to people. So to avoid the void, we have to fill, because people will fill that void with negativity. If I don't hear from Shirley by email for a few weeks, if I ask her with a specific request, then she doesn't get back to me. I'm not going to go, well, she's probably just really busy. I'm going to say, well, she doesn't really care, or she's not on top of things. So we have to remind people low in authenticity that they are creating a void that we want to fill. Other ideas that people have in terms of working on this quality and making it come across more strongly.
Scott, can I?
Ideas? Yeah.
Scott, it's Michael. I do want to make sure that we give room for more people, but this is great. But I just want to just say quickly, I think a couple of things that Karen brought up are extremely good points, including the what you call trust. This is a blatant marketing. I just wrote a blog on the concept of belonging, and I think that's related to what Karen was saying, that if people feel they belong and are accepted by the group for who they are, they'll be more likely to be more authentic. So, for example, without going into, again, too much detail, I just was recently coaching someone, and she asked, so at what point in my career can I let my hair grow naturally? She's a Black American woman and felt that she wasn't being authentic, but, you know, she didn't want to get in trouble or upset people at work. So people are struggling with this a lot, and I think if you can, through your coaching, open up that discussion, you can be really helpful to people. And I'd just like to say, if people want to talk about this more, let us know, because I think it's a really important topic, that it's not just enough to make people feel included. They need to feel that they belong and can be accepted for who they are. So I'll just end it there.
Okay, thanks. I'm going to get one more comment. I see Mary Mavis has her hand up here, so we're going to have Mary weigh in, and then we're going to move on to our next topic, which is resonance. So Mary, let's see if you can unmute you here. Oh, she's self-muted here. Mary, can you unmute yourself so we can hear you? Looks like you're self-muted. We'll give her a chance to see if she can do that for us. So Mary, if you can unmute yourself, we'd love to have you weigh in. I see your hand is up.
Scott, I think she has a question in the box.
Yeah, she had, a question in the box, okay. All right, let's take a look here. Can you read that for me? Well, let's see, I think I've got it here. All right. Mary said, I think the word authenticity is tough to hear. I went back and asked for feedback specifically from one group of stakeholders. I asked questions about what I do and how it lands in them. I can then, as she said, I'm on the computer. She's going to have, let's see if she has more to weigh in there. Okay. So she talked about weighing in with what lands in them. And it looks like if there's more to add there, Mary, let's just add more in if there's more for us to know about it. So it sounds like Mary was checking in with her raters on authenticity about, that's a great idea though in general, to just always to follow up with your raters to say, you know, here's what I'm trying to do, or here's a theme that I'm working on, such as authenticity. And how is that coming across for you right now? And also we have a comment from Karen. Michael, I would love to discuss the issue of trust and belonging more. Where can I find your blog? Then I could set up a plan. Okay, back to Mary now. Then I could set up a plan. I take time before meetings to think about what outcomes I want and monitor my own behavior. It's tough. Even with good intent, I sometimes hear myself out of sync. Okay. Well, sorry, I was toggling back and forth. The comments are a little hard to read in GoToWebinar. There's always that gap between intention and perceptions. Michael, before we move on to resonance, if you could just tell us where we could see your blog.
My blog is on the Bates website. So if you go to the Bates website, we have a new design webpage. But if you scroll to the bottom of the page, then there's a space there where you can click on the various blogs. It should be, I think it's the most current one. So if not, it's the second most current one. So go to the website, www.bates-communications.com, and it's right on there.
Yeah. Looks like Shirley had a comment here. The comments are so difficult to read here. Shirley, I'm just going to unmute you so you can just share that out loud, since I know you can speak up. So Shirley, back to you for a second.
I was going to make a separate point, Scott, which is being told that you're not authentic is quite an emotional thing. And in the normal course of feedback in business, you don't get commentary on that kind of topic usually. So people might have a tendency to deny it and push it away, and my suggestion was going to be that actually giving someone the space to explore that in a trusted environment that, this creates is probably a rare occasion. So not rushing past it and giving people time to really take the time to understand more about what's driving it. This is a rare environment where you're actually talking about this. I did have somebody the other day say that they'd gone out to some colleagues and done a survey monkey and said, I've been doing something I'd love some feedback on, and posed a couple of questions and just set up their own individual survey monkey. I'm not sure I'd feel comfortable doing that. Again, it's about trust. But if you're really looking to get feedback once you really understand what's driving it, that might be something that some clients potentially feel comfortable doing if it's not about actually having a conversation with people you trust. Yeah. The feedback that I gave in the box was just saying that, to Michael's point, I was really quite stunned that people wanted more of my point of view. As a coach, I've been conditioned and trained to be coaching the other person. So it was a bit of a revelation in my feedback session with Michael that actually I needed to be given more of myself, and that was what I put in the chat box.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I think that's not uncommon, really. You know, I had a leader very high in practical wisdom, among other things, and very low in authenticity, and I was a little hard-hitting with him. I said, you know, if I worked with you or for you, I might feel like, boy, there's this guy who's so expert, and yet he withholds it all. He's not really sharing it, and I want to hear more of that. And he gave me the whole line about, you know, I'm an introvert, I'm not comfortable sharing myself, and I said, well, you told me a lot of that practical wisdom comes from earlier in your career, working as a mechanical engineer before you were in pharmaceuticals. And I said, do you ever tell stories about that? And he said, no. And I said, well, would you be comfortable sharing stories about that? And he said, well, yeah. So sometimes it's something like that, that you don't have to share everything, but you might be able to find something you can share that's as relevant to people. And it doesn't feel like such a high bar of what you're disclosing. So we're going to move on to talk about resonance now. But Megan, if you could wipe clean all the hands raised so we can make sure. I think we just have Shirley's up there. Thank you. Let's talk about resonance now. Feel free to raise your hand. It's probably easier. The chat box is a little tricky, but you can try it if you want to. So we can only read sort of one line at a time. I'm going to have to change the interface we use for these webinars going forward, I think. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on what makes resonance difficult. So as a reminder, as you're thinking about raising your hand or formulating your thoughts, resonance is that ability to be, it's one of those EQ qualities. It's the ability to be attuned to what others are thinking and feeling. It can sometimes show up as being fully present and attentive. That's not usually the most difficult one for leaders. It's when leaders get lower raters on things like reading and responding to nonverbals, or helping others clarify their concerns and feelings. That comes up pretty often. So why do you think resonance feels hard for a number of leaders? I'd love to have you raise your hand and share some thoughts here, and especially somebody we haven't heard from. I might actually put Bill Horst on the spot here, and Bill always has a few interesting things to say. So Bill, I'm going to unmute you and put you on the spot for a moment. So Bill, can you hear us?
I can.
All right, and you're weighing in from Denver, Bill?
I am, yes, from Denver.
All right, so any thoughts you have on why resonance might feel like a tough nut to crack for people?
The resonance part pops up a lot in terms of people connecting on the intellectual level, but not on the emotional level. So like item 52, clarifying people's concerns and feelings. There are a number of leaders who get to where they are through kind of their intellectual ability, and the feeling part just kind of is in the background. And so when they get feedback that they're not able to connect on the feeling level, they really react to that pretty strongly in terms of, that's not my job. I'm here to lead and give direction and those kinds of things, but really don't connect on the feeling level very much at all. And it's kind of hard for them to talk about that, the importance of it. Like you said, it's the EQ area, but that's where I've run into it the most.
Yeah, there's it's sort of the perception that this is kind of mushy stuff, like kind of Dr. Phil stuff in the eyes of some more thinker-type leaders, I find, that it feels a little touchy-feely for people. Have you seen that in people, Bill, like a suspiciousness about resonance?
Yeah, I have, and it connects really well with the authenticity side of it as well, I think, in terms of them not willing to be vulnerable and talk about other people's feelings because they're not sure if they actually start talking about their feelings how to handle that. And so they prefer to keep it on the intellectual level because they feel confident in that area.
That's a really interesting take on it, Bill, because I often think of the two as quite different in some ways, because authenticity is more of a self-focus and resonance is another focus, but as you explain it that way, that certainly makes a lot of sense to me. Others who'd like to weigh in on this, feel free to raise your hand if you have something you'd like to add. I'll put somebody else on the spot. I'm putting a lot of our Bates team members here on the spot a little bit. Maybe I'll kick it back to Elizabeth for a moment. Elizabeth Gibson.
Scott, it's really looking at resonance. I have to agree with my, we're talking about resonance, right? I flicked out for a moment there. Sorry, I had to step away. I think that really does, as Bill said, reflect or connect to authenticity. And it can be overwhelming if you are having a negative reaction to someone, having to subdue it in a professional setting, and I've seen it cause people to shut down. I don't think it's easy to steer one's way through that. I think with the advent and introduction of emotional intelligence, though, there's a lot more openings that I've seen in the professional world for introducing suitable acknowledgement and alignment with other people's feelings.
Yeah, well put.
Scott?
Yeah, good. Yep.
It's Michael again. So, Bill, I'd be interested, because when I find people low on that same item, I usually take the approach that you need to let people express their concerns about your goals, your vision, your plans, etc. In other words, just like Scott was saying about authenticity, it's not talking about, you know, your childhood traumas. when it comes to clarifying feelings and stuff, I usually frame it in terms of when you present your plans or your goals, etc., do you give people the opportunity to express their concerns or questions about the direction, etc.? So that's the way I frame it, and it's usually really helpful to people. So I'd be interested in you responding, pushing back. What are your thoughts about how I approach it?
No, I think that's good. Where people get tripped up that I've worked with is that if people express their concerns in terms of having evidence or data that's contrary or concerns in that area, they tend to do fairly well with that. But it's when they have concerns in terms of talking about these goals are overwhelming to me, and I'm not sure if I can get there. I'm kind of intimidated by what you're saying your vision is because I don't see the path to get there. So they tend to do fairly well when it's something that's data-based or more analytical in terms of how they're concerned, but not as well when they're talking about, you know, how they feel and what it how it might affect them emotionally.
Okay, well, that's been an interesting discussion there, folks. Let's go on now to think about, well, what do we do to help people get better at resonance? If it is a tough nut to crack for the reasons we've described, what do you do to help leaders come across as more interested in and more aware of what other people are doing? Because often I find what I have to do is clarify, I'll say directly to leaders in the insights calls, is it that you don't notice what others are thinking and feeling or and so forth, or is it that you notice and you don't act on it? But either way, what tips do you recommend or what ideas do you have? Again, if you could raise your hand, that would be ideal, because then we can see at a glance who would like to chime in here as well, to kind of work on that IQ and come across as a little bit more attuned to what others are thinking and feeling. What would you suggest?
Scott, this is Walter. I just had a a comment that I think it does relate back to authenticity and resonance. And for some people, those are a little bit emotional quicksand. I think some of the fear is that if I open up that door, I'll get into an emotional area that I'm not equipped or feel comfortable dealing with. And there was a professor out at Stanford, I think it's Jeff Pfeffer, who talks about leadership BS. And one of the things he talks about authenticity is you can't be authentic everywhere, so it's not a very good concept. But I think helping people see the situational aspects of both authenticity and resonance, that it's not a mine shaft of emotions that you're going to get pulled into, that you can divulge different parts of yourself at different times in different situations and be resonant with other people in a variety of different situations. And I think that's one of the strong points of XBI in general, the situated contextual aspects of it. So my two cents worth.
Yeah. Michael, anything to add here before we move on to another topic?
Well, Ashley, I'd like to take the liberty of volunteering Elizabeth, because she taught me a really great way to get people who don't see the nonverbals to see it. So, Elizabeth, I'm putting you on the spot. So, hopefully.
Michael, I'm not sure what you meant. Was this watching movies?
Yeah,
yes.
I think so.
Yes.
I thought, oh no, what have I done now? Yeah. I actually got this from a psychiatrist, head of the neuro research labs at UCLA, and he had done this with a guy who had a lot of difficulty reading emotions. And what he suggested, and I borrowed, is that you have someone take a movie, a very good movie with excellent actors or actresses in it, and something that they are actually couldn't get engaged in, and watch part of it with the sound off and make notes about what they think is actually going on, watching the people's faces, watching the gestures, and then play it with the sound on and do a comparison, and do that a couple of times so that they actually train themselves to cue into the nonverbals. And then I found out somebody else said that in the book Emotional Intelligence 2.0 by Travis Bradbury. He actually lists something like that as one of the exercises that people can do. So it's not original to me. Borrowed a couple of times over.
Yeah. So that's a great one. Thanks, Michael, for prompting Elizabeth on that front. Another thing that also we owe a bit of a debt to Elizabeth on, because this is some of the work she did with Best Buy, among others, and documented well in a book, is the head, heart, hands model, to get people to slow down, to ask questions in a multidimensional way. You know, what are you thinking about such and such? What are your thoughts about this? What was your thinking that led you to this, so I can understand what your rationale was? What are you feeling? Or especially if I'm noticing nonverbals, making a process observation, to say, hey, Elizabeth, from your body language, it seems like you're not all in on this right now. Or I can't tell what you're feeling right now, Elizabeth, so why don't you let me know? Then the hands would be, tell me what you're planning to do. So to get people to slow down and to kind of check in more deliberately with others rather than defaulting to kind of plowing ahead or sticking with their own thoughts. So some great things there. You know, in the interest of time, I think we will cover vision. And I'm going to kind of give you my take on what makes vision difficult. And then we'll have a few people weigh in on what to do about vision, since that was tied with practical wisdom on our list, our wish list here. So what I've seen in doing a lot of these insights calls is there's three or four things that get in the way of vision coming across, and maybe you can think of some others. But first is, hey, you know, vision is not my job. You know, at my level, I'm not really responsible for coming up with a vision. That's the job for the big boys in the C-suite to come up with. I'm at this VP level or SVP level, and the vision gets handed down to me. So that's one, I believe, misconception that gets in the way. Another element is that, gee, it's just not within me to be this. I'm not very visionary. I don't come up with great ideas. I'm not an inspiring type of dude. So it's hard for me to kind of fire people up because I don't feel that way. And then the last is Michael's favorite, which is confusing a vision with a goal, where you say to somebody, oh, well, your vision's not coming across, and why is that? It's not coming across. And they say, well, I don't know. I've given them everything they know. I told them that we need to get our revenues up by 8%. And like, yeah, that. When? Why would that be inspiring? So those are some of the things that get in the way. Or maybe a fourth one would be just feeling like there's not sufficient time to devote to it. I'm so caught up in fighting fires that I'm not making time for myself to sit back and really formulate a vision or take the pulse of others. So those are some things that come up frequently as some of the reasons why vision might feel like a tough nut to crack. So with that in mind, if you want to add to that, that's fine. But either way, what would you recommend for leaders who need to work on vision? Because it's worth noting that I picked vision over practical wisdom because it is the lowest rated facet of all 15 if we look at the aggregated data over the few years of the XPI. So what would you suggest for leaders who need to work on vision? Any thoughts there? Maybe we'll throw Shirley back on the fire there and see if she has anything to share there. How about, what do you think based on what we've been saying, Shirley?
I think starting with how you want the individuals you want to inspire and be excited by the vision to react, what do you want them to think and feel and experience? Mm. I think starting with that end in mind, how do you actually get to that end state of how people are actually behaving and experiencing the way that you actually want them to? It's easy to think about really the task aspects rather than the feelings and excitement and the stuff that's less tangible to discuss.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And that's like the bridge. I often say resonance is kind of like a gateway facet, because if we're that much more attuned to what others are thinking and feeling and wanting, it's going to be that much easier for that vision to land, as to Shirley's point of making it land for them. Let me throw it over to Walter. Walter, do you have any thoughts? I know, worked with leaders who need to work on vision. What have you tried that's been helpful for them?
I think connecting it to intentionality a lot, that quote that we have seen, that vision without execution is hallucination, and trying to get people to see longer term about where you're going, a little bit back to what Shirley said, you know, start with the end in mind. So where do we want to end up, and what are the steps along the way to help make that vision turn into reality, and if you get the vision out there, then you can kind of walk back about how do we get there. But if you start with how are we going to get there, people are going to see it purely as task driven rather than inspirationally driven.
Hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Walter. Other thoughts, Michael?
I have kind of two favorites. I'll just keep it to two. One is I often send people a link to a TED Talk by Simon Sinek. Many of you may know that one. It's one of the more viewed TED Talks. So I won't go into the details of it, but it's Simon Sinek, S-I-N-E-K. You can just put Simon Sinek TED Talk and watch it. I found it even works with engineers. it works with a lot of people to get them to understand it. But the other thing I do is I start to get people to think about what is your passion, what is your cause. It's the you know, why do you show up to work? Set aside the money and stuff, because most people are dealing with, you know, they're not starving for they're pretty financially secure. So it's to help them get in touch with what's their passion, what's their cause. And that usually leads to a fairly good discussion. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But that's the two things I usually do.
All right, looks like Karen wants to weigh in again. So Karen, your thoughts here.
Yeah, I like all that's been said. I would also add, for technical people, think of, you know, Steve Jobs. You know, it's aspirational. You're not just trying to create the transaction, but you want it to be beautiful as well. And, you know, what are your thoughts around, if it's a product or a service, what's the experience that you want people to have to help them get beyond, it's not my job, or, you know, I'm not wired that way? Because we all have an experience that we want ourselves to have. So maybe you start there. And then if you think about others, and that ties to resonance, what is the experience that you want them to have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think also with Steve Jobs, to build on your point, Karen, to be able to simplify the vision is really powerful. With the iPod, Steve Jobs said, we're going to put your record collection in your pocket. This everyday language is powerful. Another little clip I recommend sometimes is Jack Dorsey, who co-founded Twitter and was CEO of Square, now CEO of Twitter. He has a nice little clip. You can look up, if you look up Jack Dorsey and user narratives. So telling a little story that captures the vision, either something that you have done, or when they created Square, the little payment device, he would have his team come up with a story of how they want, say, a transaction in a coffee shop to unfold from the point of view of both the proprietor and the customer. How different that would feel from the annoying interaction people have when paying by credit and getting an annoying little piece of paper that you're going to lose immediately and so forth. And they use those user narratives as ways to construct an exciting vision of everything they needed to build there as well. So I think that's helpful as well. One last thing I would add in vision is sometimes it's to make it feel like it's within you. I often will say very directly to leaders, hey, does anybody saying that you need to go off to a mountaintop somewhere and come up like a guru with this vision in a vacuum? Because that might make it feel really difficult for you. And people will laugh and say, well, of course not. I say, yeah, well, you know, like, hey, you know, you're very high in resonance, you're very high in humility. Why don't you leverage that strength you have in resonance and humility, go on a vision listening tour and say to people, hey, folks, what would we want our team to look like a year from now? What would excite you about our function if we were to change things up in the next year? Then you can come back and synthesize it and report out to people what you learned by going on that vision tour, because sometimes people have this notion that they need to come up with a vision. And also you have to challenge people to say that even if you're a first-line manager, you still have to make daunting goals seem realistic, exciting, and attainable. You can pull people back to the items. You still have to paint a compelling portrait, a compelling and vivid portrait of what could be. We have to do that at all levels of leadership. Before we wrap up, we had one question that I just noticed there in here that Christy Pearson was weighing in. Just want to understand a little bit more about this pushback we're sometimes hearing about resonance. What's the typical resistance that others have seen when discussing resonance with others? How does the client defend against the discussion? So, Michael, or anyone, you want to weigh in on that? So, again, what's the typical resistance that others have seen when discussing resonance with others, and how does the client defend against this discussion?
Well, I'll give it what maybe Christy, I may give a non-answer answer, and that is I usually often don't attack, if that's the right word, resonance directly. I usually go to something else first that will impact the resonance, like inclusion or something like that.
Yeah, or interactivity.
Yeah, in other words, resonance is a tough nut to crack. So I go to something easier so that if they're more interactive or more inclusive, it will or they're more authentic, in other words, they're more transparent, that by itself will increase resonance. So I usually don't attack it directly because it is so hard and people get defensive or what the hell is it, that kind of stuff. So I take a different route to get to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I've done the same thing, Christy, at times. I've sometimes started with interactivity. It's like, well, if you're not getting in front of people enough, it doesn't really matter how much resonance you have to begin with. So let's talk about what's getting in the way of the quantity of the interactions as well as the quality, and then we can drill deeper into resonance. So I agree, it's not always where you start, but it's one of those ones that often does turn out to be a leading thread, because I feel like if we can improve resonance, we can improve practical wisdom. We can make your wisdom that much more practical to people. We can make your vision land. We can make people feel more included and that you have a higher level of concern. So those are some things that are good to bear in mind. All right. That's about all the time we have for today. It's been a great discussion. Megan, why don't we just advance to the next slide? And just as a few final comments, I want to thank everybody for joining us today. Hopefully we'll be able to have the recording available for this before too long. And Michael, Walter, any final thoughts before we sign off?
Just thanks everybody for participating, asking questions. These are becoming more interactive, and that's great. Really appreciate the thoughts people had.
Okay, Walter, anything to say?
I'd just echo what Michael has said. Thanks for everybody in participating. And if you have things that you want to chat about individually, feel free to contact any one of us. So.
Sure. And yeah, one other thing I'll note is, I'm sorry for some of the frustration I felt with the questions bar here, where Andy Atkins and I are talking about going to a different platform for these community of practice webinars. We've been using Adobe Connect, which is a lot more robust for us to be able to chat and see each other's chat comments and so forth. So one of my goals the next time we do one of these is to have a platform that, which is a little more friendly to the interaction. So that's a coming attraction you can look forward to. So on that note, I want to thank Michael and Walter, as well as Megan McGrath, who behind the scenes has been our producer here. With the snow in New England and me traveling, we're all on a different location today, but I think it worked out pretty well. And thanks so much for all of you, especially for sharing so many great insights and questions and thoughts. And I can preview and say we will be setting up soon. Our next webinar will be in June, and we'll be featuring Lena and Halvor Holtur, who are our partners in Denmark. It's the reason I'm going to be in Denmark in a couple of weeks. They've had huge success with the XPI, and they're going to share a little bit of the lessons they've learned on their journey with becoming certified partners and using the XPI with quite a few folks across the Nordic region, to the point where we're getting, I think, 9 or 10 other people certified in the Nordics in a couple weeks. So thanks so much for joining us. It's been great being with you. Scott Weigert signing off from London, and we'll be back in touch electronically soon. Have a great day, everybody.